Hey y'all, it's Chinlin from the future. Due to minor technical difficulties, some of the audio in this episode will be just a little off. We do apologize, but I think you should still be able to make out everything you're hearing. And that's it. Please stick around and we hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin,
Sunny,
and Brandy.
Sunny and Brandy from Book of Lies Podcast is back to talk Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, y'all.
Woohoo!
I'm so excited. Yeah. Okay, so we're here to talk about Sabrina, all four seasons. Probably mostly talk about the fourth season since it just came out and it's like fresh on our minds. Sunny, would you like to say the spoiler warning?
Okay, there's no going back. Spoilers are ahead and it is good. So get ready.
Okay, thoughts on the fourth and final season? We can start with what you liked.
I liked the Sabrina getting her party on in hell. And she's like, oh yeah, it's calm every night in hell. It's amazing here. And like, you know, she married the Prince of Hell.
Caliban.
And she's the Queen of Hell. And they're just having the best time. I think that's like the funnest part. That Sabrina's her universe or whatever, you know, she's just living her best life in hell. And who said hell's bad, you know?
Sabrina Morningstar, living her best life.
Sabrina Morningstar, yes.
Let's see. One of the things I liked about the fourth season, I liked that Roz got more into the action with magic because they decided to make her a witch, which I guess to some people felt kind of random, but I think it made sense.
It made sense.
She had the cunning since the first season.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, I was thinking, oh, because her grandmother was like, oh, our family was cursed by witches. Mm-hmm. That's what made us go blind, and we became cunning women. So obviously we found out that was a lie. I guess they were witches, seers. So where was the blindness coming from? Was it a bad witch who cursed them? So that was a little confusing.
No, it made sense. Okay, so what that is, it's like a sixth sense. Blind people have a sixth sense because they can't see. And their sixth sense is basically like their, you know, extra sensory. They can see things, the future, the past, or whatever. So that made sense to me.
Yeah. So I liked Roz getting in more of the action. I liked how Theo got to still be with Robin. So that all worked out with Robin. I don't know. I guess I love the show as a whole. I don't have too much that I liked about the final season, which kind of sucks, but I guess you sort of expect it because most shows have shitty last seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of picked it when it was like, oh, you know, we've got these eight terrors that are coming, and I was like, okay, they're gonna play a terror out every episode. This is how they're gonna play it out.
I liked the terrors. I did like that. I forgot to mention that.
It's okay, but I like the way kind of each episode was directed towards a terror. And they kind of played it out that way. I thought it wasn't going to happen the way it did, but it continued to happen. So they tried to wrap it up in a nice little bow, but I think they could have done different things as well.
I like the Theo Robin story. I wish there was a little bit that we learned a little more about Robin, other than that he's a hobgoblin. But yeah, and I also, I liked the Sabrina Nick reconciliation, or you know what, if you will, them getting back together, because I was like, they needed to be together. what did he say? We're in game. I'm like, okay.
In game.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I liked their, you know, I liked them as a couple, and I liked Mambo Marie.
Yes.
I liked her character a lot. And yeah, the whole thing about, you know, Roz, you know, come new woman, you're a weird woman or a weird girl or whatever she said. I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. I get that. So.
She opened up her third eye. Like, I was like, oh man, she's opening up third eyes on people. That was fun. I did like Mambo Marie as well. I like that they brought in all of, like, the cast out witches, you know, and then they were just hanging out at the coven pretty much. And they were like, oh yeah, we need Pestilla. Come here, come poison my brain. Oh,
Pesta.
Yeah, Pesta. We need the water witch to come in and, you know, do this. So I like that they used those characters. I like that they had them at their disposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they joined the coven, so they're still there. And they kind of, season four was like a reminder that they were still there.
Right.
Helping out. Okay, well, I'm going to start ranting about stuff I didn't like. So if I say something that you guys were going to say, feel free to interrupt me. Because I took so many notes when I was at work on like little post-its.
That's hilarious.
Because I had thoughts and I have to get these thoughts out.
Do it, do it.
Oh my God. Okay, first of all, Mambo Marie. She was excellent in season three. I liked that they brought her in season three.
Uh-huh.
But then in season four, she didn't do that much. She was kind of just in the background. And then it turns out she's not even Mambo Marie. He was using Marie as a disguise.
Right.
Right.
Like, it was so random. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was random, especially since, I was going to call her Petunia. What's her name?
Prudence?
Prudence and Ambrose went to New Orleans and found her. So it didn't make sense that now she's a dude. That was weird.
Yeah.
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 I think they played that character out like that to... Because the Resurrected, was the Resurrected one of them?
Yes. The Resurrected Man.
Yeah.
The Returned.
Yeah. So they had to battle for their lives or you know, whatever that episode was.
Mm-hmm.
For her to have to reveal herself as a different person entirely and then take those souls back. It was weird. It was very weird. I was just like, okay, I guess.
Like, there's so many different gods in mythology and folklore. Like, they couldn't have just had someone else take the dead back.
I don't know. They could have brought somebody in. Like, oh, let's conjure this person to, you know, usher these souls across. But one good thing about that episode is Dorcas. How, you know, Dorcas lost her shit for, like, two seasons. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was three, the last two seasons, yeah. And when... Agatha, is that the other one's name? Agatha came back because she was resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
And she forgave her sister for killing her, and that gave her back her sanity. I like that. I thought that was nice that they, you know, made her whole again.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the sister who died was Dorcas.
Okay, so Dorcas died.
Dorcas died. Agatha was the one who went crazy.
Okay.
The pagans made her crazy, and then she killed Dorcas because she was crazy. Yeah.
And then her father, Faustus, is just like, oh, yeah, my daughter's crazy. It's cool.
Faustus was, okay, that's another thing. That what irked me. Oh, my God, what were their names?
The twins,
yeah. The twins were totally underutilized in this movie, in this show.
Judas and Judith, right?
Yes. They could have totally done so much more with Judas and Judith. They didn't show them having any sort of powers. They, you know, they didn't speak very much. I was just like, what are they here for? Other than, oh, you're going to help me usher in the end of days. Like, that's just horse crap. They underutilized them completely.
I agree. Yeah. Back to Blackwood. He's a great villain, and he had a good plan to bring the Eldritch Terrors. What I didn't like with him this season was that Mary Wardwell, how she gave up in her faith in God. And he just sort of was, it was so easy for him to get Mary on his side.
Yeah.
And it didn't make sense to me.
I think she was a weak-willed person. You know, he sent Agatha to her door, and she was like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like a Bible, not a Bible salesman, but, you know, people, that's what churches do. They recruit you to their church. They get you to come.
She was basically like, hey, join our cult, because why not? And Mary was like, Mary was like, sure. And that was it.
Yeah.
When we first meet Mary, she's just like, you know, the nerdy teacher, the historian. And when she encounters Lilith, Lilith kills her and takes her place. So then all of a sudden, Mary comes back.
She's alive again.
Yeah, that was kind of a myth. Because from season one, episode one, she died. And then Lilith became Mary. And then at the end, Mary comes back?
Because Sabrina was like, return my favorite teacher.
Oh, good job, Brian. Good job. Way to close that loop, honey. But she, her mind wasn't right. You know, she knew that there was something going on. She knew that she imagined this and saved the little girl and did this and did that. And she was like, I have no recollection of this. So I feel like she was lost, and she was easily to be, you know, brought into this cult of houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's not an irreligion, it's just another cult.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I didn't like how she just went with that.
Yeah.
Because it felt like it was too easy for Blackwood to just get more allies. But yeah, so that was...
Like, he looks like a creep. If I saw him coming and or he was trying to sell me something, I'd be like, nope, I'm not interested. I don't care if it's $1 million. No, you're going to sacrifice me to an eldritch terror. Not interested.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. What else did I not like? Lucifer and Lilith, they didn't have too much going on, which I guess I wasn't that upset about it, because I felt like their stories were the bulk of the show, seasons 1 through 3. Caliban was a dick.
Yes, he was.
He was like the worst husband ever, and then like Sabrina Morningstar just would not see it, and she was just like, oh, I want to be with Caliban to the end, right? Mm-hmm. To the end, and then spoilers are ahead, when she dies, like, oh, they're desecrating her body. Why? Get out of here with your nonsense. But then it was Lilith. Like, Lilith, one thing I didn't like, let me say what I didn't like. I don't like what she did to her baby Adam. That was not right. That was messed up. And it scarred me for a day after I watched
it. It scarred you for a day. Uh-oh.
She didn't have to do that.
At all, she didn't, and that's why I was like, she must have gone crazy.
She could have just ran.
Yeah, I think she went crazy before. Like, I think giving birth to Adam made her go crazy, because all of a sudden she was like, my baby, my baby, my baby. And when the kings came, she thought it was Lucifer coming for the baby, but it wasn't. And like, she was like, Lucifer's gonna try to do. She like, for some reason, had it in her head that Lucifer was gonna hurt Adam, but Lucifer was like, that's my son, and he wanted a son. So it didn't make sense why she was so hellbent on keeping him away from Lucifer.
Yeah. Of monsters, right? So I don't know what the problem was. Like, she births monsters, and this one by default should have been a monster, right? Remember? He bit her and she's like, oh, you little devil, or something like that. Like, she had a little demon baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you on that, Brandy. Like, why would she do this? Like, I think that was just unnecessary, and they just wanted a level of shock and disgust from us, and they got it.
This is to shock and disgust them.
It was a huge shock, and it was like the same. It was the same thing that Lucifer did to her with her Mary Wardwell's fiance Adam.
Yeah.
So like, I kind of see what the writers are going for, but it was still unnecessary.
But did she eat the baby or she just cooked the baby?
She cooked it.
It didn't show what was under that under the, that it. Platter.
It's implied that she cooked the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that Satan, that Lucifer was like, okay, well, since you're going to be a bitch, I'm going to make you human and you're going to feel all the feels and you'll never die.
So she gets to be immortal. Yay.
And he took away her powers. Yeah. He took away her powers and made her human. And what? What are you going to do now, Lilith, except live with this pain forever and ever?
The one thing I did like was that Lucifer deserved to die. He was abusive.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He was terrible. He got handsome at the end of season two.
Right.
Before when they were only showing him as a goat man.
Yeah.
Like he was creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
And I preferred him as a goat man. And then once they made him human, they made him into human form. He was sexy, but it didn't really have the same effect.
For season one, he's the goat man and he's scary and he's snarling and, you know, and you're just like, oh, hell, what you want, Satan? Like, what is it?
The Dark Lord.
Yeah, like, I guess when he could talk and was attractive, he was just kind of snarky, I guess, or just like, I'm the king of the underworld, you know. I cast you out, false daughter. What's your problem? Stop it, Satan.
Okay, so Lucifer is the king of lies. He is the deceiver, and he is a seducer. So those three things embodied in that man make sense. It has to be an attractive man. It can't be an ugly dude to play Lucifer because Lucifer is a seducer. And he, you know, if you watched, have you ever seen, you know, Lucifer the show? Lucifer is a very, very attractive man. So
I've seen the promos.
It makes sense for Lucifer to be that guy because he can get you to do shit that you don't want to do. And especially these people are his disciples. Like he's their dark lord for the first 2.5 seasons or whatever. So of course he's going to be the guy that makes them do stuff. And then of course they can't turn him down. And his looks only enhance that. Like who wants to do the bidding of an ugly dude? I don't.
Oh, I'm not complaining about him being attractive. I just think his character was more effective when he was unattractive. Oh, man. Oh. But yeah, those are my thoughts on Lucifer. I'll probably think of more as we keep talking. But I didn't like the very end with Nick.
Swimming in the Sea of Sorrows?
Yeah, they implied that he killed himself, and that's just romanticizing suicide for teenagers, and that's awful.
Yeah.
I thought it was legitimately, like, drowned.
He said he went swimming in the Sea of Sorrows.
Oh, well, I guess I get it now. Okay.
He was like, I'm going to see Sabrina. That's basically what they told us.
Because he told Sabrina, we're endgame. But then Sabrina died, so he can't live without her. Oh, I know.
And that's where I'm like, okay, so if there's a fifth season, they're going to have to bring Sabrina back. They might not have to bring Nick back, but they're going to have to bring Sabrina back. And Sabrina is not in hell. So where are they going to go to get her? She's not in, you know, the underworld. Where are they going to go? To heaven? To get her?
Is she even in heaven?
It was a white place, so...
It looked like the LA Museum. It looked like the, what's that museum called? The one of those museums, it doesn't really matter, in DTLA, with the huge pictures.
Yeah, but that's not a place that they're going to go get her. So where exactly did she go after she died? Elysium?
I don't know.
She's not in the Elysian Fields.
Oh, maybe she was in the what was that last area called?
The Void? She destroyed the Void. They destroyed the Void.
No, they got the Void in the Pandora's box.
Right.
But my theory is maybe she's not in heaven. Maybe she's in like some sort of limbo. But if they bring back the show for a fifth season, like, how are they going to get her from limbo?
Exactly. And
they buried both her bodies already.
Yes. And I thought they were burying her in the cane patch, but I guess they didn't.
Maybe the cane pit only works for Hilda.
Well, it worked for Dorcas. It worked for Agatha.
It worked for Agatha.
I feel like when they lost, because they've lost their powers so many times, mm-hmm. I feel like something had to have happened with their land and their property or something like something along those lines.
I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, it wouldn't. I feel like they just put a bow on it, but it's not really a bow because it doesn't make sense for Nick to have committed suicide and be where Sabrina is.
Yeah. Overall, season 4 was kind of depressing and dissatisfying. Because there were so many open-ended questions at the end.
Yeah.
I think the writers, they weren't really sure how Sabrina's story was supposed to end, so they tried to, like, quicken everything and rushed it all to put a little pretty bow on it.
I'm with you on that. I think they tried to wrap everything up in each episode. Like, I feel like in every episode in the final season, it tried to kind of close certain loopholes. What did you think about episode 8, The Endless? Or 7?
The Endless? Okay, so I was confused about The Endless. Alternate Salem being The Endless was okay with me. I was confused because Sabrina Spellman being in... No, not Spellman. Fuck.
Morningstar.
Morningstar. Morningstar showing up in The Endless. I was confused because Sabrina's already been there before, but they were all treating her like, oh, you're new. You have so much to learn. But she's already shot episodes before, and they show us that footage.
Mm-hmm.
When she and Harvey run lines and whatnot. I actually liked seeing the old Aunt Hilda and Aunt Zilda come back for a cameo. I liked that. That was kind of like a nice, hey, teenage witch watchers, we remember you. Here's a little candy for you this episode.
I knew it. That's exactly what I was saying. I was like you said, you used to live for the other, you know, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And I was like, I think this is to give the feels to the people who love the other show, and that's why they made Salem the stuffed cat talking Salem. Like, you know, the weird part, like, you know, the weird...
Stuffed cat. What?
Yeah, stuffed cat. Well, I was telling Chinlin before we got on, I watched season 1 over again when Sabrina gets Salem, because he's a demon. Like, he appears to her in demon form in her house, and it's super creepy, and then he turns into a cat. So then I had a better, I felt better about accepting that that was the Endless after I watched it again to kind of put it together. I was like, okay, I guess he was a demon from Jump Street. Because I was like, why would her cat turn into a demon? Because I forgot that her familiar is a demon.
But the Endless isn't a demon. The Endless is a terror.
Aren't demons terrors? Potato, potato.
No. that whole thing, I was just like, really? This is ridiculous. I thought it was hilarious that how, like, they had been saying from Jump Street, the Void is going to consume everything, including the other terrors. And Salem was like, no, I'm separate because I am endless. So I'm going to be around even, you know, with the Void. And Sabrina's like, no, dude, the Void's going to consume you too. And he's like, oh, shit, we got to get out of here. And I was just like, oh, my God, really? You're that dumb? You're that egocentric that you think that the void is going to just bypass you to consume everything else? No, it doesn't work like that.
That's exactly what I think.
They made stuffed Salem really cocky.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm the head writer. I can write whatever I want.
Shut up, or you go to the green room.
Cat food. I was like, there was so much tuna. Everybody has to eat cat food. That is nasty.
Going off the outline a little bit, my favorite episode was the one with the perverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that alternate reality that Blackwood created. Because I obviously the writers are going for like the Nazi Germany parallel.
Yeah.
With equating real life Jews being
witches
to the witches in the show, being persecuted in the show. So I understand what they were going for, and I liked how they set it up, and it was so, I guess it was so smartly written, cleverly written, I meant, because it's the imp of the perverse, so it's not gonna be 100% what Blackwood wanted.
Right.
Which is how Sabrina and Ambrose were able to get back to reality.
I found it was very, very appropriate considering who Faustus is and his personality, that he would be basically a dictator who would accuse people, and without question, they would just be taken and imprisoned or executed. And it's like, yeah, that's basically the type of, you know, dictatorship that went on over there. And so, yeah, it made perfect sense that that's how his world was depicted.
And it's like, you're a witch too. Like, what the hell? What's your problem?
Yes, but he's the ruler, so it doesn't matter if he's a witch.
Man, oh man. I just, so the perverse, that's when they finally were able to kind of slow him down and, you know, give him the...
Give him his comeuppance.
Yeah, what did they call Agatha? Something Agatha? Dumb Agatha?
Mad Agatha.
Mad Agatha. They're like, oh, we've got to watch Mad Agatha. Which is kind of funny.
I enjoyed that they gave her sanity back in the perverse world.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because there was a pretty much an underground revolution happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you guys like that Roz got with Harvey?
I didn't really care.
I didn't care that much either.
I didn't care.
Well, because there's so many characters.
And you are dating my ex-boyfriend? Oh, no.
Oh, God.
How dare you? That's
gonna rip. Oh, my God.
Well, if you hearken back to the Archie comics, Veronica and Betty were friends, and they both dated Archie, so.
He's not Archie.
I know. This is an Archie. Sabrina's from the Archie comics. Veronica and Betty dated Archie, so, you know, it doesn't matter. Okay. Anyway, I did not care if Harvey and Roz dated. They're teenagers. That's what they do. They're teenagers. That's what they do. Like, you're going to tell me that in high school you didn't see couples switching boyfriends and girlfriends all the time? I did. And they were best friends. I remember this.
Do we want to move on to character development?
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about Zelda because, like, she comes off as so strict and mean in, like, the first season. And she's still strict and mean throughout the show.
Mm-hmm.
But she learns to not take her sister for granted.
Yeah.
Gradually. Like, it's a gradual progression. It's not super dramatic. It's not dramatic at all. But in season one, when the Spellmans were put under the sleeping spell by that sleep demon, or
Batty Bat.
The dream demon. And then Hilda had that dream where they were like stuck at the hip and they couldn't do anything without each other.
Right.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought. I forgot why I brought that up, but it had something to do with Zelda's character development. Like she got used to, she knew that she should be grateful that she had a sister, and she shouldn't be treating her younger sister in a bad way.
Yeah, she in Zelda's dream, she killed Hilda, and Hilda didn't rise from the cane patch or the cane pit. And the Dark Lord was like, "Where's your sister? Why is she's not coming back?" And then she was like, "Oh, my sister! I miss my sister!" And she was crying. And so that's when she like stopped killing her sister.
But before that, she killed her. She just walked up and bashed her in the head with a hammer. And she was like, and then she buried her and she came back. And she's like, and if you cross me again, and I'll do it again. Like, excuse me? You're the worst sister ever.
Yeah, and Hildur said, "One day I'm not going to come back." And so that was when she, I guess maybe that got the gears turning in her head because it kept taking longer and longer for her to come back.
And I liked how Zelda kind of became more of a leader for the coven after they gave up on worshiping the Dark Lord.
Oh, when they started worshiping Hecate?
I liked how she took charge.
After Lucifer, they worshiped Lilith for 5 minutes.
Because Lilith was the queen of hell.
Yeah,
And so,
exactly.
yeah.
Which
But
makes sense.
the power still came from Lucifer, even though they were worshiping Lilith. And it wasn't until they started worshiping Hecate that their power came from her, because after Lucifer forsaked them, they started losing their powers. And so it was like now, yeah, well, the pagans didn't have, their powers weren't from Lucifer.
No, I'm saying the pagans, they did something to them also. Like their power was dwindling. It was like around the time that the pagans came in. That's when Lucifer was like, "Aha, I've taken my gifts from you." And they're like, "What are we gonna do?" Because they were bathing under the blood moon, remember?
Right.
That was the one where
That was the full
they were
moon.
the full moon. Yeah, they were gonna bathe under the full moon, and then Hilda, being the sweetheart that she is, decides to give them a moon pie, but then they use the moon pie and cast a spell to take the moon away.
Yeah, the pagans, they ate the moon.
Which I thought was pretty cool, effects-wise.
Yeah.
I mean,
See, the pagans were more like Wiccans. They were nature-based, so their power came from the earth. Except for, they were assholes, and the
bad.
yeah, they're assholes. But while they're that whole thing, they before they started worshiping Hecate, they were worshiping Lilith, and that's when the pagans were there while they were worshiping Lilith, because he was like, "Oh, you guys don't worship your Dark Lord anymore." And they were like, "No, they're like, there's been a change of regime or whatever she said. I don't remember what she said, but they were still worshiping Lilith at that time because they were praying to Lilith, and Lilith heard them, and it didn't work. So then, she was like, "Okay, screw this. We're gonna worship the mother, the crone, and the what is she? The mother, the crone, and the."
Maiden Mother Crone.
They killed him with birth pain.
They killed him with the pain of childbirth. That was hilarious, the kings.
That's funny. Like, okay, so I don't remember what we're talking about. Continue, Tinlin. We were talking about Zelda, right?
I was saying how I liked how they made Zelda more of a leader for the coven.
Okay, so she led the charge in birthing Lilith's demon baby. She was like, "We're gonna share in the pain." I was like, "No, I've had two children and I know what it's like and I'm not interested." And then they're like, "We're gonna give the pain to the kings." I thought I liked that. I liked watching all that happen. Like, I thought it was a good scene. It was a good process when they're like, "Okay, we're gonna help her have this baby. This coven, we're gonna help her have this baby." And then when the kings showed up, they thought they were just gonna run things. And we're like, "Oh, we just had a baby, and now you're about to have a baby. Just kidding, you're dead."
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
That's exactly how it happened.
You guys wanted to talk about Ambrose?
Okay, Ambrose.
Ambrose's accent, his speech, ugh.
In the beginning, his accent is fine. It's very British. It's very clean. It's hey cousin, oh hey cousin, the aunties, the aunties. But season four, I think he was sick of playing Ambrose and he lost his accent. It felt like he had like a frog in his mouth the entire time.
It sounded like his jaw was jutting forward and he was speaking with his chin out. That's what it sounded like. He spoke like Thurston Howell III.
It was really off-putting. I could, like, anytime he was on screen, that's all I could notice was that accent. But I do like the evolution of him because when we're first introduced to him, he's on house arrest. He says he's been locked indoors for 75 years. Mm-hmm. Because he tried to overthrow the witch government?
The Vatican.
Something like that.
The Vatican.
Yeah.
Witch government. The Catholic Church.
The Catholic Church. Okay, so that's what he tried to do. But then he gets into bed with Faustus and he, you know, lets him go. And then he's traveling. And I like that he's very just like open in his sexuality. He's like, okay, today I like guys. I'm okay with girls. And that's just what it was like with witches, right? They were just very...
They're pansexual.
Pansexual.
Yeah. I kind of like that. But the accent just really, it just really was off-putting. And he's the freaking, he's the Undertaker.
Yeah. He's a coroner or whatever.
The coroner. Not the coroner, but he does the embalming. But they're not called the coroner.
No, they're not the coroner. No, the coroner works for the county. He
the funeral guy.
Yeah, he's the what do they call them? The guys that run funeral homes. That's what he was. He did the autopsies and stuff.
And the embalming. Like, what's that role called?
I think it is Undertaker.
Maybe it is the Undertaker.
Yeah.
So at first I was just like, okay, that's creepy. They have a mortuary in their house. But watching season one again,
mortician. He's a mortician.
Mortician. We're so lame. We were like, mortician, come on. But when they were like, oh yeah, how often we're gonna have like, you know, blood on hand all the time? And I'm sure they were like cutting off body parts when they were, you know, pushed for closed caskets and stuff. And I like that they only mention it, like, in one episode in the first season. That's the only time they mention that they do stuff with the bodies that are in there.
Why would they mention it more than once? I wouldn't want to hear about that all the time.
It makes sense because they're into, you know, the dark arts and they have to cast spells and usually there's a cost and blood and bodies and they have just access to them all.
You know who's lost their accent over the course of the show was Prudence. Because Prudence is not English. She's not British. She's American. The girl that plays her. So she had to put on her accent. Like, I would be, like, listening to her and her accent would drop and then it would come back. And I was like, oh, okay. You need to work on that.
Oh, my God. I didn't even notice with Prudence. I noticed a little bit with Ambrose, but I forgot she had that British accent, right, in the first season?
And she had it throughout the show, but it would drop in and out. And I was like, are you like, can they make up their mind? Like, I understand that, you know, a lot of times when people come here, they might lose their accent a little bit, but hers was just like, she would speak normally like this. And then she'd be like, hello, father. And I'd be like, are we doing that? Like English to English translation thing happening here? What's going on? Like either have the accent or don't, but that dropping the accent, like, maybe she didn't notice that she was doing it, or maybe she just needs to work on having an English accent, because if a British accent is on her resume, it needs to be better.
Yeah. Oh, I had one thing to complain about Ambrose, and it's not even about him. It's just, he's the cousin, right?
Yes.
But there's three Spellman siblings. There's Hilda, Zelda, and Edward.
Uh-huh.
Where's the fourth sibling if Ambrose is also Hilda and Zelda's nephew?
Maybe he's a distant cousin.
Great aunts. Yeah, maybe they're great aunts.
Great aunts?
Like their parents, one of their parents' siblings' children's children.
Oh. They never explained it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Show. So it's like, how are you a cousin? Like, we want to know.
But that doesn't matter. Like, in this world, that doesn't matter.
I get that. I understand that. But kind of what Chinlin is saying. They didn't really say how you are related. But this fool was like 150 years old also.
Yes.
You can't forget that.
Yes.
So how old are these bitches if they're the auntie?
They're at least, like, I feel like one of them said like that what, they were 500? Like over 700 years old.
700? Oh, I need a family tree. Someone needs to make a family tree. Owns the Spellmans.
Spellman family tree.
Look, let's do a fan fiction and we can create a family tree.
And then I already mentioned this with Roz earlier. I liked how the writers, she's always been a witch, but we didn't know that until the last season. Uh-huh. So I already mentioned it, but that was the other thing I wanted to say about Roz's development.
Yeah, it makes the most sense that she, you know, was able to kind of join. And then she had to go through that thing with Harvey, like telling him that she's a witch. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, Harvey, if you can't get on board, you can get out.
Ah, gosh. Harvey's like, you're not a witch, right? She's like, no, of course not.
No, I just have magical powers. I'm not a witch. Stop it. Mm.
Were there other characters you guys wanted to talk about?
I like the evolution of Theo.
Yes.
Who used to be Susie.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot that was her name.
I liked that, like, she was who she was. No matter, like, that's who she was. Like, her character did not change. The only thing that changed was her name, and she got a fresh haircut. Because even in season one, her hair was very short, and she was a friend, and you could tell, well, it was insinuated that she was being picked on at school. It wasn't insinuated, it was really happening.
Yeah, it happened.
Picked on by the boys because they were unsure as to if she was a boy or a girl, and they lifted up her shirt.
Well, she tried out for the boys' basketball team as Susie, not as Theo.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, towards the end of season one as well, when she did try out for basketball, but at the beginning, she was being picked on by the boys who wanted to know if she was a boy or a girl. Then she decided to, like, hey, I want to be Theo, like, that's who I am, that's the name I choose, and she was trans, pretty much.
He's a trans actor.
Oh, so he was a trans actor in real life, too?
Yes, he's trans.
Did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, kind of like Elliot.
Elliot Page.
Yes, but Elliot Page was Ellen a long time. For a long time, she was Ellen. Now he's Elliot. But yeah, Theo is a trans boy.
I like it. I just like that they were able to be true to who this character was. This person was and was able to create a character for them and to have them go through that experience. I'm sure it was painful because people are dicks, you know, people were jerks to Theo. And I like that Theo got to have love with
Robin.
Puck.
Robin. That was his name. That was his hobgoblin name is Puck.
Yeah, I loved it. And he was like, I'm cool, like, I can have a boyfriend. This film, I thought that was sweet, actually. But, like, you know, they found their match, you know? I love
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Theo was great.
And then the last thing I wanted to wrap up with was favorite villains.
Lilith was one of my favorite villains. Dorian was also one of my favorite villains, even though he kind of towed the line between villain and you know, sympathetic hero, not sympathetic hero, but like support character. Mm-hmm. But he was a villain, and I enjoyed Dorian because he always wanted to be around beautiful people. And I love how he was like, well, with a face like that, I was just like, that's hilarious. That's all he cares about is looks.
Oh, yeah. And when the uninvited guy came for Hilda's wedding and he was like, we have a strict dress code. And he gets his fucking heart ripped out.
Dude, it reminded me of the witch on Beauty and the Beast. When she's like, can I come in for some water, please? I'm so thirsty. And then the prince was like, oh, you ugly, no, you can't come in here. And she was like, you're gonna regret it. I don't care. She's like,
But that was his personality.
It really reminded me of that. Like, he's like a stinky bum.
A stinky bum. Oh my god. He's the uninvited. So
I would have got my heart ripped out, no doubt.
Oh god.
Okay. Sorry, Brandy. Go ahead and continue with your favorite villains. I do apologize.
That was it. It was Lilith and Dorian.
Okay. I myself like Lilith as well. Lilith and Mrs. Wardwell. Because when she was Lilith pretending to be Miss Wardwell, she was like the worst friend that you could have. Like someone that's in your face saying that she has your best intentions and advising you. And on the other hand, she's got alternative motives to get you to sign your book in the Book of the Beast.
Your signature. You know? Sign your name?
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, how could you not know this is not Mrs. Wardwell? Like, how could you not know that this is not your teacher? Her hair's different. She's super spicy. And you're a witch. You should have, like, a sixth sense to know when there's a demon around you. And, you know, it took a while for her to figure this out, that she was the puppet master. Season one, she's the puppet master. You know, she's...
Okay, but you have to remember that Sabrina was pretty self-involved. Like, she wasn't really, she didn't have a sixth sense because she was focused on herself. Like, everything that she did was basically for herself. Like, I want to get Harvey's brother back because it'll make me feel better. I want to do, you know, I want to have, I want to stay here, but the other Sabrina wants to stay in hell, so let's just not merge or whatever we're supposed to do, and let's cause this gigantic cataclysm, even though Ambrose told us this was going to happen. So Sabrina was self-involved. She wasn't really going to notice that Ms. Wardwell wasn't Ms. Wardwell.
While we're at it, let's go get my boyfriend from hell.
That too.
Yeah, I'll just drag all my human friends down with me.
And, oh yeah, by the way, let's kill Agatha so that the Earth has a body, but then let's bring her back and then fuck up everything. She just kept fucking up shit because of her self-interest. She wanted to do good things because it made her feel good, not thinking about what consequences would actually happen.
Yeah, she had a lot of privilege. Sabrina was troublesome, but it worked because we got to have more adventures, and that's what we're in for.
Chilling adventures, right?
Yeah. So, my favorite villains were the pagans in season 3. I love mythology. I love folklore. I like reading all those stories, and I enjoyed the writers kind of like taking some of that and weaving it into the season 3 stories.
Yeah.
Because the main guy of the circus, he was a satyr, the half man, half goat.
Pan.
He was Pan. And then they had Circe, who could turn people to stone. Oh no! Wait, no.
That was
not.
I was gonna say that's what she,
Medusa turns to stone.
She's a Gorgon.
Circe turned them to animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then who was Medusa? Yeah, the snake lady.
The Gorgon. She's a
the Gorgon.
Gorgon.
Yeah. So she turned people to stone. So I liked how they took those stories and kind of weaved it into their own thing for season 3. And like Brandy said, the pagans, they were very nature-based, earth-based. They loved animals. That Circe lady was like so mad at Hilda for trapping a spider. Like, she didn't even kill the spider. She just held it in her hand.
Yeah. Okay. She was like, I keep them as pets. And that's when she was like, what?
I think she overreacted.
Yeah, she did.
She did. For sure.
She overreacted, but I was okay with that because it still makes them a good villain. Because they're not... Villains don't think of themselves as villains.
Yeah, and they're not logical at all.
And I think they played it really well with the pagans. What else was I gonna say? So the season 3 is my favorite season, not just because of the pagans, but that finale, that season 3 finale was the shit. With all that time travel. I love time travel shit, guys. It's it drives me crazy, but I love it. And what bothered me was that in that alternate, not alternate, but like Sabrina was stuck in the stone.
In the
and
past.
And then Caliban, like, took over hell, and he tried to take over Earth, but the pagans, they had Earth, so they destroyed Caliban.
Yeah.
So that made sense to me. What didn't make sense was Sabrina, like, there was, like, a time loop that started, but we never knew where it started.
Because
there's only two Sabrinas once we know how the time loop started.
I think it started with Ambrose, didn't it? Because he got that, the egg thing, the thing that, for the terrorists, the thing that he birthed, and they used it to, like, kind of go back in time. So I think Ambrose was involved some shape, way, or form in there. I can't exactly remember what happened, mm-hmm. but something happened.
That was the biggest thing that bugged me. At the end of season 3, we never know how the time loop started. So then we end up with two Sabrinas.
I think it was when she, after she came back from Golgotha, and she went back to the stone to trick Caliban into trapping himself in the stone, and then she was leaving, the other Sabrina was coming back. So there was those two Sabrinas. She didn't go to all of the other timelines where she had to go to hell first and then, you know, they tell her what to do and all that other stuff. She went straight to give me the gold. Or silver. The what's his name? Judas's silver.
Yeah.
I don't know. I watched it twice.
That's what started the whole thing with the terrors and you know, because now the two Sabrinas are there and shit just starts freaking going haywire. I enjoyed that hell and earth were trying to merge. I thought that was funny.
That was so weird. Like, it was like a twin, like one of those twins that are conjoined twin. You know, it's like, oh, we can't split it. That was weird. I mean, I thought the final season was interesting. I thought it tried to put a nice little bow on top of it, and the progression from who Sabrina was at the beginning as a 15-year-old girl who didn't even embrace, like, her magic and got all this magic when she finally signed the book. She was very clever because her family taught her how to be clever and to use her wits and to think and to, you know, when you get cursed, wash it off and, you know, all kinds of things. It was a good series. And even to the end, she thought she had a plan, you know, with getting that the terror out of her or, you know, what have you. But she just wasn't smart enough at the end, I guess. I enjoyed the story. I didn't think I really was, but I did enjoy it.
You know what? I forgot. My favorite episode was the episode where the angels come for them.
Oh yeah, they attack the church.
They stab Sabrina, and she just freaking hovers over them, and she's like, "I am the Dark Lord's sword." I was just like, "Holy shit!" Yeah. I was like, "You go, girl." That's like my that was my favorite episode.
That was badass.
They put that crown on her, and she was just like,
ah. "Yeah."
She's got those arrows sticking out of her. Chest?
Yes.
Yeah. The Herald of Doom or the Herald of something like that. It's just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. That was dope. That was my favorite episode. I was just like, wow. Yeah. And she couldn't remember any of it. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, her powers from that episode just, like, disappeared. That was, like, a one-time thing.
Yeah, because that was her power from being Lucifer's daughter. She was the queen of hell. And then that was also her witch power. It was the combination of she was being a third. What did they call her? A 3-in-1, a human, the Satan's daughter, and a witch. So she was like a, what do they call her?
Triple threat.
They called her like 3-in-1 or the something. I can't remember what they called her. But I was like, wow. Like, yeah, but she didn't get to keep her power.
She would have been too powerful for the rest of the show.
Yeah, that's true.
If she had kept her,
her devil power.
Her devil power. Yeah. Yeah, that was a good episode.
Good job, Brandy. Way to bring it up.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. I totally forgot.
Yeah, I almost forgot too. And I was like, oh, that's right. Like, she kicked ass for a minute.
Well, that wraps up our discussion about Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, seasons 1-4. Brandy, Sunny, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast to talk about this. And I don't know. I can keep going on and on, but yeah. we're not gonna make this too long.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Honestly, like, we love coming and talking with you, Chenlin. So I'm looking forward to Beastars season 2.
Oh my God, Beastars!
Oh yeah, season 2. Do we know when that's happening? Came out in Japan, I think.
So we don't get to see it.
I don't
know.
Ever. It's gonna be a while.
Yeah.
Till it comes out here.
Well, we have no plans this year, obviously.
Until every single person gets vaccinated, I'm still just going to be at home watching TV every weekend.
Yeah. Well, there's people that are not even going to try to take the vaccination. So then there's that.
Oh, God. I hate anti-vaccine people. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. until next time, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving.